All right, Carlton, take it away.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chats, a podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. And we've got with us Andy Ide this week, who's builder of horse records and all-round good fella. Hello, Andy.
G'day, Carlton. G'day, Will. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Thank you for coming on the show. I've wanted, been talking to you for online for ages.
I brought some light reading. I'll just hold it up to the microphone.
Oh, Django for professionals, yeah, I see, yes.
Written by some hack. And Django much. For APIs.
Oh.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, a bit of light reading for this evening afterwards.
Okay, so Andy, we're always plugging the books. What would you say about Will's books?
Well, look, I love the Django for professionals because I'd learnt Django and I needed something to take me from sort of experienced beginner that targeted like the mid-level of programmer of Django. So I knew things, but I didn't know things like management commands. I didn't know template tags. I didn't know management model managers. And this book, Django for Professionals, just took me up to that next level and answered a few questions. That was great. Django for APIs uses, I don't know if you guys know, a little plugin called Django REST Framework. Have you heard of that one,
yeah,
Carlton?
We've heard of that. Yeah, heard of that.
So. Just in passing. What I loved about this book was, the Django for APIs book was, I went through and I went, oh, that's how I do it. Oh, that's how I do it. Oh, that's how I do it. And I was like, it gave me a sense of confidence in that what I was doing with DRF was actually good because I was running about 3 or 4 apps and I had no idea if I was doing it the right way. And it turns out that we were in agreement on how to do things. So that was good. But if I had to do my pick, I'd say Django for professionals. But get the lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's interesting because I always, you know, someone was saying, how do I learn Django? And I always point people to Will's books, thinking Django for beginners and then Django for APIs. But of course, a tweet came up the other day, well, where's all the middle grade material that gets you from that beginner to intermediate level or beyond? And it, of course, Will's books are the answer there as well, actually, because the professional's book takes you that, you know, that step further. So it's nice to hear you, that's, you know, your take on that.
Well,
as well,
we'll get into your background, Andy, but you have a background, so I think that's why beginners is a bit unnecessary. But I know it's very, very kind of you to say that. I appreciate that because I think of the books, the professionals was the hardest to write and is the one that
I'm trying to,
but there's so much that's not in it. Like there's so much more that I want to have in it, and it's hard to push the curve up to the point where it's like this is the best practice. You need to know this versus who the heck knows and experts do it differently. So that's the level I'm trying to get it at. Is like there's pretty much consensus up to here, and then I think I do in the book. I'll say, now it's a choose your own adventure.
And it's, where do you draw that line? Where do you say this is, you know, this is where I'm going to go? You know, do I talk about hacking Django? Or no?
Well, and that's, I think the critique is, to the extent there's a consistent critique of the books, it's that they show and don't explain. And I kind of get that. I wrote them explicitly to be the opposite, to be top down instead of bottom up. But the issue I have now is that now that I'm 10 plus years into Django itself, I'm really interested in the details. And so I have that urge, like past, you know, engineering based authors, to really, really show you how cool it is. But I know I'm just going to lose people. So it's always that mixture of context, like here's how to actually do what you want to do. And then let me explain it to you because it's really kind of cool and you could do all these things, but I don't want to totally lose you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like a university professor can just lose you, but you're stuck there. But with a book, if it's not engaging, no, you know, you're not going to study for the test. It has to be useful.
Yes.
Any event, let's
well, you've totally hijacked my opening there, Andy, with your plugging Will's books.
I was just so excited about the books, Carlton.
No. You've got the hard copies as well, so that's good. Yeah. The thing we really want to chat about is your application horse records that you're building and everything that's gone on there. But in order to give a bit of intro to that, tell us who you are and your background, and then we can lead into the app that you're building.
I'm Andy. I'm based in a little country called Australia. You can probably tell by the accent. I've flipped my video upside down, so I come up right way for you guys. So that's all good. Mate, I started with computers in the early 80s. My grandfather was into a thing called a Sorcerer computer, which is a bit like a BBC Micro or a, of that era, bit before Commodore 64 was that generation. So it's BBC Micro was the one I remember, but ours was called a Sorcerer, and I never had enough games, so I'd start coding in BASIC. They had some BASIC there, and you know, just car racing games and stuff I'd find in a book and type in, you know. And then after that, probably in the late 80s, I was given this book, Turbo Basic, which had everything that Turbo Basic did, and I went completely nuts and just wrote. This was early PCs, like 286s, kind of sort of 2 meg hard drives were where you went. And I remember my old man wanting to get a 4 meg hard drive, and everyone said, "You're crazy, you'll never need that much." So those were the days. I was still at school. And then in the mid-90s, I was working as a team leader for a company that was coding in this strange language called PHP. So I started learning that kooky language and got into websites, which were all the rage in sort of the late 90s, early 2000s. They were sort of, a lot of them were written in Perl, and we were moving into PHP. I had my own business for about 8-10 years building websites. And I found near the end I was starting to get beaten in the website game by the graphic designers, because they could make a website pretty. They couldn't necessarily make it performant or secure. But
who can see that?
Who can see that? Yes. The customer didn't care. And it got to the point where, you know, these sites got hacked and the graphic designers would be calling me to sort of clean them up. And I still do the odd WordPress unhack site job. So I made a career building websites in PHP, and there was a brief foray into Angular with JavaScript and Ember, the JavaScript framework. And about sort of late 2018, 2019, I was given a task at work and a new project, and I was agonizing with my mentor. I said, what do I do here? Do I code it in PHP? I hate all the frameworks. I hate all the JavaScript frameworks. I just hate everything and I hate everybody.
That's the 20-year itch.
Yes. That's a life in tech. Yeah.
And he said, well, why don't you use this as an opportunity to learn a new framework, learn something new? I went, oh, that's good. Okay, well, I'll look at Python. So I looked at Python and I looked at Flask and I looked at Django. And I started off with Flask and realized that you have to bring your own batteries. So what I found with Flask, I was new. I didn't know. They said, oh, you could use all these packages. There's like 3 or 4 for authentication. And I'm like, I don't know which one to use. And then after a week of watching videos on YouTube, I thought, okay, I'll give Django a chance. And I looked at Django and they said, oh, use this. And I went, well, you know, if they've chosen it, they've been around 10 years, 12 years, whatever, it must be okay. And I just found that the decisions that Django had made with its batteries included concepts really resonated with me and allowed me just to focus on actually writing what I needed to write and solve the problems I needed to write. I didn't need to worry about what authentication library I needed to install or what templating library I needed to install. There were sensible defaults that were good enough. So that's sort of my journey into Django, yeah.
Well, there is a saying, if you use Flask long enough, you end up kind of rebuilding Django.
Exactly.
There's an interesting combination of beginners go to Flask first because of the Hello World, even though Carlton's given a talk on Django Hello World. And then at the same time, I think in larger companies, there's actually quite a lot of Flask usage because you can just spring up a dedicated API endpoint and just bolt it on. You can do that with Django too. But I think the combination of those two is partly why, like, there's a lot fewer fully Flask sites of any scale out there. There's a lot of, you know, tiny sites or some endpoints with Flask.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that makes the numbers, the comparison, a little bit off. You know, if you look just at stars, they're used for different things.
Yeah, exactly. And often, you know, part of being a sort of engineer who's got senior in front of his title just because he's old, not because he's good, but you've been in the game long enough to realize maintenance matters. So what is it? The median age of developers is five years experience on Stack Overflow.
I thought you were going to say 5 years old.
Five years old, yeah. Well, some of them are pretty good. but the experience, so half of developers have got less than 5 years experience. And if you've been around a while, eventually you start to see your projects that you coded need maintenance, and a lot of the maintenance problems start to come up. So Flask being small works well, but often with things like Django, it goes, your projects get bigger and bigger, and you always need to be able to maintain them.
I wonder how much of that is, you know, being, you know, doing consulting and having ownership. I mean, Carlton, you did consulting quite a long time. You know, most people are either new in their career, or even if they're at large companies, you know, they do something for a year or two and then they move on to the next thing, right? Like, what was that Google Stadia, the new video game thing they killed? And partly because, you know, all the impetus internally is on creating the new thing, and then, you know, there's no reward for maintenance. So I think
Correct. A
lot of people, even people who make a lot of money and are very prestigious, don't feel that pain, or they know that someone else will feel it. And so it's, you know, you don't get promoted for maintenance in a lot of places.
Yeah, and you can always move on after 2 years, so you don't have to maintain your software. So.
Well, that's especially, like, I was briefly out in Silicon Valley. That's the, you know, the 2-3 year itch. It's like the first year you're like, oh, this is great, like, new thing. Second year you're like, okay, I know what to do. It's getting annoying. Third year you're like, I hate all of it. It's a dumpster fire of tech debt. And then you go to the next place.
Yeah, and then you sort of.
But then you get, you know, then again. You used to get a, you know, 40% raise. I mean, you used to. So, you know, again, you can't, like, get blame on, like, someone's resume, like, oh, I keep following this person and their code is trash. But any event, yeah, so that's, so Python's not necessarily, sorry, Carlton, I know you're going to have all the questions for this, but I just want to get a couple in while I can. So Python isn't necessarily the sexy thing these days. There's, like, Elixir and there's all sorts of other things.
Yeah.
What was it? Maybe you're too experienced to be excited by those. What else did you consider, I guess, is my question, you know, back 2-3 years
ago? Back in the day, it was always for Python. My mentor wants, you know, I think he'd be really happy if I went with a compiled language, but it's just not my background. And when I started coding Python, I sort of got the feeling of back in the basic days. You know, everything's fairly simple and clean.
Just kind of works.
Yeah, the nomenclature is easy. It's been around a while, so most problems are solved that I would find. You know, I'm not here. I'm not one of these devs who's sort of on the cutting edge of stuff. I'm just using it to produce something cool. And you sort of, I don't know, I don't need the latest and best thing. I went there with the Ember and the Angular. I got burnt when Angular went from Angular 2 to Angular 4 and then got called Angular, and what was Angular turned to AngularJS. And the fact that they didn't have any portability between the versions and no backwards compatibility just turned me off Java frameworks forever.
Carl,
I'm sure
Carlton,
I'm going to get
hate
mail for that one.
What is that thing that you still use? You still use an old time JavaScript framework by choice, not Ember, right? But what's the? Don't you have a favorite? What do you use for JavaScript frameworks if you have a choice?
If I have a choice these days, I will use HTMX for I'll use Alpine JS. I use Elm. The thing I like is Elm.
Okay, that's what I was going for.
Right, but
not to attack you, but
it's a whole left field maneuver. And the reason I like it is because it's this whole little other language. This sort of functional language is a bit like Haskell, and it compiles down to JavaScript, but you never see JavaScript. And because it's strictly typed, there's no, if it compiles, it runs, no runtime errors. Like, you, the, you know, you can, it's a miracle if you can get a runtime error out of it. You, you know, so you never see JavaScript, and that's why I like Elm. But you
I've
know,
got
I kind
a bit of jQuery on my site, so
So jQuery was awesome, and then I got into sort of Backbone because it gave you a little bit more state around jQuery, and then the Ember thing, and the, it just it was all just getting too much, and I never followed it, and I never got there. And then, you know, it became, it, the whole world became so far removed from what I was used to that I was kind of ever more migrating towards being a back-end developer, back-end developer. And that's why I'm so excited by this HTML over the wire thing, which, you know, we'll talk about, in, Andy, because you're using Django Unicorn, I know. But HTMX, Django Unicorn, the Hotwire stuff, it's just so exciting because it's like, do you know what, this is just like doing JavaScript back when you first picked up it's just like doing jQuery when you first picked it up, and you're like, you know, select my selector and then remove it, oh, and it's gone, and oh, animate that, oh, it's animated, wow, amazing. And and it's like these little these lines of, you know,
I can recreate the marquee tag.
And if you want that yellow fade in thing, so give it background yellow, fade that out,
link text. That's awesome. I've got the shivers now, guys.
Anyway, so Andy, so you're not agencying anymore. You're not doing client work particularly. You're working on a site called your own site. Because the one thing that came to mind when you were talking about agencies is the trouble with ownership is you give over your project and you try and convince them to take on a maintenance contract. They want it, and they'll be like, ah, no, we don't need a maintenance project. And then, you know, a couple of years they come back to you when it's totally broken, and you're like, but I don't want to fix it now. I wanted to maintain it, you know, every 6 months.
I wanted
I'll give
you
a little
to
update,
pay
you know,
me so I could keep my business running, not come to me when it's all on fire.
Right. So that's why I got, in the end, I'm like, I can't do this agency work. I want to, you know, do other things. And but you're doing Horse Records. Tell us about,
Somewhere in my journey when I had my web business, I met a pretty girl and I ended up marrying her. And turns out that I married into a pretty good pedigree, if you pardon the pun. She and her mother have run the oldest stock horse, Australian stock horse stud in South Australia. So a stock horse is the Australian working horse. It's like a quarter horse in America. It's not bred for racing like the quarter horse was bred to do the quarter mile, but the stock horse is bred for versatility, intelligence, you know, strength, endurance. You're just a working horse that can just do a bit of everything. Anyway, so I'm married into the horse world. So a city boy, you know, moving and working in, going into horses, and no one warned me how hard that would be on the body. Anyway, so after a few years, my wife wanted something online that could record what she was doing with her horses. So horses need worming. Horses need a farrier, which is for their hooves, their feet. They need a dentist. A horse needs a dentist once a year. And she wanted to record all of this as well as the breeding matches, keep a good record of the pedigree, and, you know, just dates and stuff. So I wrote a program pretty simply in PHP. And then after a few years of running it, she said, why don't you make other people able to use this? So this was sort of in 2018. And then by early 2019, when I had that project at work, which I did in Django, I thought, well, I'll create Horse Records and I'll do it in Django as well. So I built Horse Records at the same time as I was learning Django and doing Django for work. So there was a lot of cross-pollination between the things that work cared about and the things I cared about in Horse Records. So, yeah, what is the software? Well, it records everything about your horse. So I've already said your farrier, your feeds, your dentistry, your worming, your performance. So like the ribbons they win or the trophies or the races they win. You can customize it so you can add things like chiropractic if you have a chiropractor for your horse. You can record all the servings. So all the whole breeding operation is its own thing because horses, mares come on every 3 weeks. and that's when you can introduce the stay-in to them, and the stay-in can serve them. The other, you know, there's about 3 or 4 days a mare is fertile and will accept the stay-in. The other 3 weeks she'll kick him, say go away. So even though they're mammals like us, it's a little bit different. Yeah. And you can record pedigrees, which is really important for horse people. They like to know the lines. So a pedigree is like the mum and dad, grandfather, grandmother, progeny, etc. So yeah, it's a full service horse application written in Django. A little bit of jQuery, little bit of vanilla JavaScript. And hosted on a fairly small VPS.
I was going to ask about hosting. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's hosted.
Well, let's.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
We'll work backwards. Yeah.
We'll work backwards. From okay. The let's hosting. Work backwards. Hosting. Okay. So hosting, I've got it running on a VPS because it's in Django, and a lot of it is all it's all back end stuff. It's all server rendered. You don't actually need a lot of grunt in the server. It's not a single page app or anything like that, so it doesn't have that delay that single page apps have. So yeah, I just run it on a Linode plan. It's sort of at the lower end at this point. There's plenty of room for many orders of magnitude growth just in the Linode plans before I even go to the custom gig. And yeah, hosted in, Linode uses AWS. I think they buy AWS and on sell it or something like that. So yeah, you know, it's all backed up and secure. As I run Cloudflare on front, which handles all the bad actors trying to hack the thing, and you know, all the bots trying to port scan you and stuff like that. So it blocks all of those and adds some caching. So I don't need to use any of the white noise or anything like that in Django. I just use the Cloudflare caching, and yeah, it renders pretty fast. So I'm pretty happy with the performance of the site. Yeah. Oh, just such a cheap plan. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, users can upload photos and stuff. So I assume you're using Django storages, and are you hosting that on Linode or using S3? What's the media file? Just on the box?
Mate, it's on the box in the media directory. And
ooh, you're a wild man. Wild man.
No. Right. Okay, so this is the key point, right? So you stick it on a VPS and just use the file system. And I bet you've got recurring jobs, right? Like tasks that you need to run every time. So what do you use for that?
Okay, I use cron.
Just use cron?
Crontab.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And then I'm this close to implementing Django Q on it for emails. So there's
right, okay.
So I'm using quite, you know, fairly trusted, old school, boring as hell tech. And
right, but there's an episode, essay about use boring tech, right?
Yeah.
And use the old stuff and use just focus on the core things. And like, so Andy, you're a one man operation.
Yes.
And you're running the web application all by yourself.
Yep.
And you're doing the ops all yourself by yourself because
I had a DevOps guy help set me up, and I asked him some of the hard things like SSL certificates and, you know, self-created, anyway, all that stuff that they care about. But yeah, just running it day to day is me. Yeah. So it has to be simple. I've got enough problems, mate.
Yeah, no, but this is it. It's the same. You focus on Django, you focus on Postgres, you use Nginx, you stick it on one VM, and that's all the operational complexity that you need. And you can scale up to a bigger box, and then a bigger box, and then a bigger box, and nothing changes.
My CPU sits flatlining at about 1.5% usage, and occasionally spikes to 15%. But it sits at 1.5. Like, I'm pretty happy with that on a low end plan. So I worked it out. I've easily got 1,000 times more capacity just in the Linode plans. So, you know, there's plenty of scope.
So you're good
there.
For now.
I'm good for now, and that's without any sort of scaling or having to worry about scale or anything. Yeah,
no Kubernetes yet.
No, if I need Kubernetes, I'll be calling you, Carlton.
No. You actually won't. You won't, because I'd be like, well, just get a bigger box.
Keep going. Well, once you get beyond the VPSs, then you get a dedicated servers. You know, and people, you make enough money there. you're happy to pay for someone to do it all for you. Yeah, so no, I'm pretty happy with how the stack sits and how it performs. It's really, really good.
I just want to say this because I think the best example is Stack Overflow. They did eventually move to containers and probably Kubernetes underneath and all the rest. But for years and years and years and years and years, they were just running on a couple of servers at the front end with a big old database behind it.
Oh, right.
And it was the most old fashioned thing in the world. And they were like the top 10 internet sites there are. And it's like, you are not going to be bigger than Stack Overflow. You are not going to need more traffic than them. What on earth are you doing?
You're hurting me, man.
But what on earth are you doing with this Google scale technology when you could just be keeping it simple and getting on with building your application?
Yeah, there's a few gurus that say that people sort of, will it scale? Will it scale? Well, how big do you want to go, mate? Like, there's about 1.5 million horses in Australia. On 2016 figures, there's about 10, 15 million horses in America. That's not a lot of rows. Like, you get every horse in America, and then you get every horse in America.
That's big enough.
And you're starting to think, well, maybe I should, handle scale. So, yeah, I'm not hugely worried at this point. And what will happen is that 1.5 will start to go to 2.5 and then 5 and 10 and up to 50. And then I'll go, okay, now I need to start thinking about adding a couple more meg of CPU, I'm happy with the server side render. I render as much as I can on the server side. It seems to work really, really well. So, yeah, it's really quite a fast site.
I think that misconception, where does that come from? It's especially for people who are newer in their careers. I think it's a combination of many tools are built by big companies for big company problems, right? Mm. Angular, React.
Yes.
And then also, who's out there talking about it? It's
them.
People at big companies who have the time to talk and not work because they're in a monopoly. And so they're preaching about the things they struggle with, but yeah, it's not what 99.9% of places
do struggle with. Yeah, do you really need to be able to handle a million hits a second? Like,
no. Yeah, I mean, it's a good interview question, but I just wanted to mention on assets. I'm actually glad I was playing around with white noise yesterday because I'm doing some docs for a hosting service. Mm-hmm. And Jacob Kaplan-Moss has a great talk I actually saw in person at PyCon 2019 called Assets in Django Without Losing Your Hair, where he basically says, you can just put it on the file system almost until forever. Like he did all these tests. I mean, like, yeah, you can white noise and S3 and whatever else.
Just get bigger hard drives.
But like, but you really don't need to. And I love too, he also said that's the part of he hates the most is like static and media files. Because it's not that tricky to just do white noise and Django storages on an S3 bucket or whatever, but you also, stick it in the file system. Maybe not. I mean, media files, but I guess unless you get hacked.
Yeah, I'm limited to 100 meg on my video uploads. So I've said to my users, look, it's, 10-second videos, 15-second videos you can upload. And if someone wants more, ask me. And I haven't been asked yet because that's when I'd look at a third-party video for video because they're big files.
Yeah.
There's all those different encodings and stuff. And that's when I'd look at a third party to handle the video upload. But for now, I just stick them on the file system and just check the megs, the gigs left every week. Make sure someone hasn't gone, right, I'm going to upload them all.
I think there's a good test, a good litmus test for like you're running a site and you just need to upload a PDF so that someone can download it. How easy is it for me to just stick this PDF online and get a link to it? And if you're using the file system on your VPS, you just stick it in your media file. There's your link. It's, already set up to serve it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're on some platform as a service or whatever, it's like, oh no, I actually have no way of uploading it. So I've got to find some way of sticking it in
some other
place and getting a link. I think it's a good, simplicity test.
It works for now. Go on. No, it works for now is what I'm saying.
We had Adam from Django Unicorn week or last episode. Right, so there's your opening, Andy. Come on.
Yeah, okay. So I did a lot of work in Laravel in my last job. They were a Laravel house. And one of the cool things that came out of using Laravel was this thing called Livewire. And I said, I'm sure there's something like this in Django. I just couldn't find it. And eventually I found Unicorn. I went, yeah, this is basically it. It's in its early stages at that point. I think it's up to about 0.8 or 0.9 now. But I think I got onto it about 0.3. And it was very, very close to Livewire. So what it is it creates Ajax pages but does all the JavaScript for you. And it ends up that your view becomes very, very, very simple. And then any time any variable in the view changes, it does an Ajax request to the HTML page and updates it. So it is a bit like HTMX, but you're not passing templates back and forth. You're just changing variables in your view, and your template is updating automatically. And you can do much the same things. So one of the things for HTMX is to check if usernames are unique. Well, that's trivial in Unicorn as well. In fact, I like the project so much, I'm actually a Patreon of Django Unicorn. So I think 10, 12 bucks a month I send to him. And I just want to say one thing. There's different ways to support open source software. So there's obviously contribute, upload your code. You can do the documentation. You can, do what I'm doing, which is send some money to them monthly. You can be an advocate for them. So there's all these different ways. So if you're like me, where you're a little bit too nervous or embarrassed to actually commit to the Django repo itself, know that there are other ways, such as sending money or just simply being an advocate on Twitter or the socials for it. But yeah, Django Unicorn is great. I've looked at HTMX. I think that's valid as well. Unicorn sits better with me. Sometimes you just pick text because it a technology because it just works for how you think and works for your brain. I'd love Adam to get some funding to work on image uploading. And I've chatted to him. I said, oh, we got to get a Python grant for you, mate, or a Django grant somehow to get image uploading working in Django Unicorn. But otherwise, I use it in production. If you go to my website, horserecords.info, click on Tools. There's a folding date calculator, and you can just put in a date that you say, pretend that your mare was served, and it'll tell you roughly when the foal is due based on gestation times. And simply what it does is it's a date and you add 340 days if you're in Southern Hemisphere, 342 days if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. Nah, that's just because one of the good Lord's greatest jokes about horses is no one knows the exact gestation time. I asked a vet in Texas who's one of my clients, what's the gestation time in the US? She said, oh, 342 days. Yep, definitely. And of course, here in Australia, it's 340. So, and there's one breed that's some weird number. So, I don't know. It looks like an Ajax-y page, but the actual code is really, really simple. You just get the date from the form, add 340 days and say, due date is this, and it does all the JavaScript back and forth. You don't touch JavaScript or see any of it.
But the point with that is that the actual request that does the calculation that comes back to the server, renders the HTML, sends that back, which yes. gets put in the page. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, I think Django Unicorn does that. Do they call it hydration or something? Anyway, there's some word for it. It knows what to replace. It does the template for you, where HTMX, you kind of say, here's the template, I believe. I think that's right. So, yeah, it works fine. It's really quite good, yeah.
Okay. I mean, Adam, when I asked him, well, what's the sort of big difference between HTMX and Django Unicorn, he was like, Django Unicorn's is slightly better integrated with Django. It's like it knows more about Django.
It knows Django, so yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So where HTMX is a JavaScript, basically,
I'm still thinking about what you said about grants, because that's something that on the Django Software Foundation board, we sometimes think about, if, you know, why would we try to raise more money? Be nice to do Django grants. Or even Python, like we have this issue with, I can say this, with Django Girls events, where a lot of times they'll submit both to Python and to Django. And both of us have money set aside to sponsor conferences, but the vetting is difficult. And so one thing we've been trying, I think we're hoping to work on, is to ask the organizers of Django Girls to say, you know, if we put aside X amount of money, can you vet it for us? But then that puts, sort of like trickle down ownership for volunteers on volunteers. But there are these like motherships that have funding, but it's hard to, it can be hard to give it away.
And there's a lot of people,
you know, grants, and there's a lot of people who want it. And, you know, it's like, if you give to one, is that, but it, there's got to be something better than Kickstarters. And
if it, like,
there's some work we're going to do on corporate sponsors. I would like to, and actually DjangoCon US is coming up. So I'd like to, you know, if we had more money, how do people think we should spend it? Because we could get more money, but we're not going to get it if we don't know where
don't
it's going.
Don't have a plan. Yeah. And if you look at something like Laravel, which is, you know, it, this is my opinion, and I feel free to, people will probably reply to this one. Laravel makes PHP good. A lot of the weirdness of PHP, Laravel writes wrapper functions that do things like make it always haystack needle, where PHP arguments are sometimes needle haystack, sometimes they're haystack needle. Who knows? Sometimes it's underscores between the words, sometimes they're jammed together for your function calls. Who knows? Which is part of the organic growth of PHP. And but Laravel sort of wraps that nicely and hides some of that away for the punters. But Laravel makes quite a bit of money. The disadvantage with Laravel, for example, is, you know, they've got a benevolent, you know, the owner. What's his name? Can't remember. Taylor something, yeah. Brilliant engineer, very talented man. And he's made money in Laravel, and good on him. And but, you know, he is Laravel. Sort of, there's a limit there. There's an issue there, the fact that he could go evil, or he could take Laravel in a way that you don't want to take your software. Where with Django, we don't have that problem of that kind of Django being taken the other way, because you can go, right, well, I'm going to push a pull request up and hope that Carlton or Marius apply it. But Laravel makes money. Laravel is making a bit of coin. One of the ways they're doing
it. Well, he just posted an Instagram photo of his orange Lambo in front of his house. And, you know, good on him. If someone's going to make money, it should be something like that. But, you know,
And they've got a number.
There's not a Django Lambo.
No. Just the one that we drive. but Laravel has a bunch of tools that it makes money off.
There's two, I think, right? Yeah, there's the hosting is the big one, and then there's the starter.
There's that starter kit,
But maybe there's more, but I know those two, and especially the hosting.
Yeah, there's a few trickling around the edges. Like, there's sort of, we provide a basic one for free if you want the paid one, which has got all the bells and whistles. So that might be an option for the Django Foundation, is to have some of these tools to make some money. Now, what those tools would be, I don't know, but throw it out there. Let better minds than me work on it.
What do you think, Carlton? I think I've spoken about this.
I'm thinking, I mean, I think it's difficult for Django itself because of the way the DSF is structured and whatnot. I think there are a few starter kits. I know, Will, you've got a starter template. Jeff Triplett's just published one. It's been out for a while, and he just tweeted about it.
Yeah, we had him, Corey, yep.
Yeah.
He's doing pretty reasonably well with that, I think.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, so I mean, the Pegasus product is paid, and he's doing okay with it, and that's great. And there's room for, you know, there's room for your package to be monetized, Will, maybe. I don't know, but it's open source. It's difficult how to make money with it. I don't know. I'm working on Button, which, you know, it's been part.
Carlton's got his Lambo life. Ordered 10 years from now.
Yeah, well, right. No, but I don't want a Lambo. What I want is just, you know, if it can make some money, that's great. But what I really want is to not see people driving themselves down rabbit holes, building silly things. So if I can package that up, that's great. But for the DSF to do it, it's kind of like, but the DSF just isn't this set isn't up a like business. A business owned by a person. Yeah. No, it's a charity. It's a non-profit. Yeah. And how is it that Django gets to be 17 years old and is all like, it's almost like we're at the verge of another golden age with all the changes that are happening and all the things that are coming out, the usage. You know, we've just had 600 people at DjangoCon Europe. It's like masses of interest and masses of usage. Would that have been the case if Django had been a commercial enterprise monetizing itself from the go? I'm not sure, because the trouble is, if you've got a dictator, how do you move from one dictator to the next? Succession is always a problem. Whereas if you've got a community-based project, there's life around it. But I think it would be nice to see projects around the sort of Django core being able to make money. I think there's been a kind of, you know, a reticence for that to happen in the community. I don't know.
This seems to come up every episode.
No, it's just a therapy session. We talk about consulting for Carlton and
all you guys who got DSF. Your bingo code. You have to take a shot now.
DSF for me. Yeah.
Okay. So why does it come up? It comes up because of the problem of open source sustainability.
Yes.
Right. So when I was coming into it, some of my absolute heroes from the early days of the framework, they were busy publicly melting down because they'd had such a hard time.
Oh, really? Wow.
There's this idea that Django is the meat grinder and you need fresh meat for the meat grinder, and it, you know, people just get wiped out by it. And it was like, this isn't sustainable. And the fellowship program, which is the one kind of sort of monetized bit in Django, it's probably the reason Django still exists.
I agree.
It was able to take on paid work that made the unsustainable work sustainable. And so it really is a big question, like Will's work. How do we make sure that people like Will are able to continue to produce quality content and make sure that it's remunerated in a way that is realistic? And, you know, I saw a comment on Twitter about Will. Oh, why don't you do free tutorials and, you know, add to the docs? And it's like, because it's a job. And because Will has a family and he has, like, to feed them.
it's crazy, isn't it?
it's less that. That's just... I'm used to that at this point, but it's more so like the DSF board, specifically like Anna, who's been the president, does a lot and has done a lot, unpaid, largely invisible, and it's healthy to have recycling, but there's a reason why the board cycles, and there's all these other areas, translation teams, docs, you know, most people are doing it pretty much invisible.
Yes.
And so, you know, and Carlton's great about this. When it becomes too much, people step away. You know, if you were paid, maybe people could stay longer. I don't know how healthy that would be, but at some point, the formation of the DSF will need to be changed. It seems to work now, but there's all these, it's all for a full circle. Before I was on the board, I was like, why don't they do all these things? And now that I'm on the board, I'm like, well, this is why. And it's because it's a handful of people who we meet once a month, and they do a lot of things, but trying not to take on more is why it's sustainable, right? Like, why don't we pull in a dozen third-party packages that are essentially part of core? Well, then who's going to maintain them? Carlton?
Yeah.
Marius? Like, you know,
no, we haven't got the bandwidth. Like,
you know, yeah, if anything, you know, kicking things out of their heart.
Kicking things out. I mean, since we're diverging all over the place, I'm curious to ask you, Andy. I've been talking with people. There's going to be a State of Django panel coming up at DjangoCon US. Mm-hmm. And one thing for me on the technical side, Carlton's mentioned, is like the start project command. There's such a gulf between local and production.
Deployment, you're talking about?
It would mean more batteries. You know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think there's a way to have like start project dash production, and what would that look like?
Yeah, well, deployment's the big thing, isn't it? That's the sticking point I had with Django. Remember, I come from the days of PHP where you just upload files via FTP.
Carlton too.
I'll sink in a can of beer, mate.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Done. Look, the way that Laravel Forge does it and the way that Carlton is doing it with Button, I would hope is the way to do it. What you really want to do is, I don't have a problem logging into the server and doing a git pull and then changing your branch and then running, you know, make migrations, collect static, and then GUnicorn restart. I don't think that's a burden, but getting to that point of being able to just use your Git repo as your sort of your upload the new files, that's the hard bit. And tools like Button and, you know, Laravel Forge and the other language, they do that. They get you to that very quickly without making it hard. And I think if you could get to that point, you would find that a lot of programmers would sort of, you know, a lot of programmers would find that appealing because they don't have to worry about, they don't want to, programmers, DevOps, when I started, DevOps and programming were the same thing. Now DevOps is specialized because everything's expanded. You have to specialize. Specialization leads to interdependence. I'm dependent on someone with DevOps. But I don't want to learn DevOps. I just want to code. There's enough problems there. I don't want to have to know a million Linux bash commands to get my site set up. So if someone took that DevOps part away from me so that I could just run a git command and then obviously a few make migrations and stuff, that would be brilliant. That would be where I would want to be.
Well, we mentioned this, I think in the episode with Adam that comes out tomorrow.
Okay.
But Eric Mathis is working on this Django Simple Deploy tool.
Yes.
To try to standardize this. I mean, I think I was actually talking with Jeff Triplett about this yesterday about, because I'm writing the docs for a hosting company. I was like trying to make it really simple, and it's really hard to make it simple versus just saying this works, trust me. But like, so let me ask you, set multiple settings files or environment variables?
Environment variables. I think Django, because Django environ, I think should be pulled into core.
So this is the question. Yeah. Should we, I mean, there's a couple of them. I mean, I like environs Django, but
yeah, one of them.
If start project came with built-in environment variables,
yes,
just for like debug, allowed host, secret key, CSRF, trusted origins,
and that a would git ignore file for it. Yep.
Git ignore, and then if there was something, if static, like why don't we have static root and static files dirs just set up, and if you throw in GUnicorn, and while we're at it, make startup have a urls.py file. I think that hits a lot of it.
Yeah, and I would agree. I would agree with that. When I went with Laravel, when you set something up, it automatically does the .env file. With Django, it doesn't. You have to create that. You have to know to create that, and then you have to create it.
This is kind of why people pay me is for this stuff, but I would rather teach other stuff, you know, like because it's like there's just it's so
this
much
is so routine.
Stuff.
I agree. You shouldn't have to say the horse's the head is this end, the tail's that end.
But it's one more thing to pull into Django itself, you know, kind of back to what we were saying initially. Then we're picking a third-party environment variables package, and we're picking environment variables over multiple settings files.
We could just code our own. Then we got four.
No, but there's a hot take here, which is this, is that we can't bring this stuff in because every time it gets suggested, and it does get suggested quite frequently, there's a massive outcry. And we have this thing called the API stability policy, which you all love because that means when you type pip install dash u Django and it upgrades and your site continues to work.
Yes.
Like, it works because of the API stability project, right? Policy, right? But it also means that we can't make changes unless there's a consensus to change. And when you come to topics like this, there's no consensus. Yeah. Everyone will go, oh yeah, we could make the start project a little bit better. And then you say, well, how about this? And then there's four voices that say no. And they say, well, what about this? And there's four voices that say no. And there's any concrete change, it's not possible to get
it.
I say not possible.
We need a dictator now.
Well, this is where the dictator comes. The benefit of the dictator is, and
they just say, "We're doing it this way," and then you're like, "Yep."
Yeah. Right. So the way forward here, though, is to just create, like, do it your way or do it one way, and just say, "This is mine," and just live with that and be happy with that, and get some people who also yours way. And look, there's 400 people. You're all advocating for, you know, Andy's way of doing style.
Which is the best way, yeah.
But let's merge that. And there's more of a chance. It gets really difficult to pick out exactly what the change is that's possible to merge with the various competing issues that come in. Because even like MBIS, we all agree you shouldn't hard code secrets in in your settings.
Yes.
Right? We all agree
it's
that.
It's all very bad. Don't exact, do it, kiddies. Yep.
Right, but there are like, if you do a survey of it, there are about 17 just Django packages on how you load environment variables and your thing, because everyone's got a different take on it and everyone's really quite committed to the take that they've got.
Oh, I've got a package with the Django variable in the settings file. Don't talk about it.
Well, I think one sort of baby step that I liked with Secret Key is, you know, now going back, I think one or two versions, it'll say Django insecure in the name, being like, hey, you really, really need to change this.
Yeah, that's good.
And, you know, we do have in the docs and elsewhere, but like something like that for allowed host, debug, CSRF, trusted origins would be something. It's not a solution. But I find with Secret Key, I found that was helpful because it like really hits beats people over the head with it.
So what you mentioned Django Simple Deploy. One thing I want to do for that is create a plugin for Button. So there's a pre-step for Button, which is get your project ready for Button. You have to have these, you know, environment variables ready to take the environment variables that are given to you. If I can automate that as a plugin for Django Simple Deploy, I'm going to do that because I think it's a great project and it can just go automate all and it's ready to go for Button. Mm.
Well, one last thing on these platform hosting companies, because I was doing this yesterday. So Heroku is based on Git. So you'd have a Git ignore and you would Git push just as you do to GitHub or GitLab or whatever.
Yeah, that's what I use in my stuff, yeah. Yep.
What is what? Git?
Git. Yeah, I just do a Git pull to get the latest branches and then, yeah.
Yeah. So the newer hosting companies, like Fly.io in particular, but many of the others, it's all containerized. It's all Docker stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't use Git. So you need... They don't respect Git push. You just run a, you know, fly deploy or whatever, you know, command.
Yep.
And so you need a Docker ignore file that says ignore the Git repo. Otherwise you're gonna toss all your Git stuff up on there. It doesn't automatically look for the Git ignore because it's not Git first. It's basically Docker first. So that's gonna trip up a lot of people. But I guess that's why I get paid, right, to write stuff like that.
Mate, if our job was easy, we wouldn't have one. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, we were talking about Git. It's a little bit of a mind shift for me, too. It's like, so then it's like, okay, well, so if you're writing the docs for one of these, for Button or something else, or for this company, it's like, okay, well, I want to tell people to have a Git ignore file because that's a good practice, but it's not really related to this. It's kind of like, you should know that, but it's not their fault that people don't know how to do that. So where do people go for that? You know, they come to me, but like, you know, should the Django docs have that stuff? It's like, it's not really a Django problem. It's like a web problem.
It's however the hosting company is doing it. And their doco is extensive, but they're trying to cover every case.
And Git, universities don't teach Git in any way I've seen, you know, people don't know how to do a professional pull request.
Yeah. Well.
People don't even know how to check out a branch on a pull request. Like, you know, CS students who, you know, they can invert a binary tree on a whiteboard, no problem.
Yeah.
But they can't pull out a branch from a remote.
I've been coding for 23 years and, I don't know how to invert a binary tree.
You turn the whiteboard upside down.
I'd probably just go python.invert.
Yeah, exactly.
Import interview.
Yes. Go on, Carlton.
No, I wasn't.
I wanted to ask about back to Horse Records. So you have an API that people can access. Can you talk about building that, how it's being used, what you want to add in the future?
Inside Horse Records, if you're on a paid plan, it gives you access to an API, which is a DRF API. They got a token and they can access all the horses they're allowed to access. It's at the moment, it's just a read-only API. The idea is that they'd have their own website they'd pull the data from horse records and show it on their site. So if they've got a, we call them studs in Australia, you would call them ranches or farms.
We call them fellows.
Fellows. Yes. So
Carlton's not smiling. That's okay.
He is a beautiful man up close. It's great.
Thank you, Andy.
So
sorry, continue.
So yeah, so you can see, so you might have a site for your stud where you say, here's all my beautiful mares and my stallions and my foals, please buy them. And you can just basically do simple get requests to the API. I say to people, look, please put some a caching layer in. You know, but yeah, my next major job is to get that really cranking for our own site. It's I have to do breeding at the moment. I'm working with one of the largest AI studs in Australia to get a breeding platform working. And then after that, I'll be getting the API beyond just, hey, it exists, to something that really, really pumps. So that'll be some more endpoints and some permissions and stuff. It won't have patch back at this point. I would want to talk to someone who's going to use that before I implement it, because I want to know what they're patching and why aren't they just logging into horse records and doing it. If it's another API wanting to talk, that's something different. But yes, so there is an API in there for the guys who want to use it. It's, you know, it's all pretty cool. You can update your token whenever you like, etc.
I want to ask about came second in some award. You got to the final of some award about this, and because you told me this story, and I'm like, wow, that's such a good advert for everything that we.
So there we're was.
Doing. Tell us about.
So a few months ago, there was the Innovation Awards, the AI Awards, and in South Australia and Northern Territory, which are sort of the two states in the middle of Australia, I was a finalist in the technology section of these AI Awards, and I came second in the end. But I was the only solo developer there in all the different awards. There was about five awards, two in each. I was the only single bloke there. The one that beat me, by the way, was converting a phone call into text for entry into the census. So, you know, I don't know exactly how many programmers they had, but at least 20. And, you know, AWS, huge budget, blah, blah, blah. And there's me going, oh, you know, horses, man. And there was another company that deals with forestry all over the world, the forestry supply chain. There was another company working on the cost of insurance for houses all through America and Europe. I was certainly in a good company. And it was amazing to just come second to something, you know, so competitive.
And, well, just well done for that. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you, mate.
Well, you know, did you not feel like Thor against the hordes when it's you as a one-man Django developer taking on these tech teams?
Yeah, I so wanted to be pulled up on stage for them to go, no, you can call the rest of your team up. No, it was a really good night. And I was really happy to get that award. I sent out a press release to a whole bunch of papers, and I got featured in quite a few, and I also got featured in a horse website in New Zealand for it, even though it was an Australian award. So well done, New Zealand. By the way, I'm at the process of talking to New Zealand horse associations to begin exporting to there. I mean, you know, any Kiwi can register their horse on Horse Records because it's a SaaS online, but to talk to those formal associations and get a formal relationship. So similar to what I have here. So in South Australia and Northern Territory, every retired racehorse goes through Horse Records. So when a horse retires from racing, as in around the track, they get a rug, they get a $500 food voucher, and they get entry into Horse Records so that the racing association says, hey, we've provided you with all the tools for you to give the best care for your horse, all the ethical care, you know, everything we can. And when I call up these customers and I say, oh, g'day, I'm Andy from Horse Records, like 90% of the time, the first thing they say is, let me tell you about my boy. And I go, your boy, Apache Sunrise, you know, he won a few races. Oh, he's got such a big personality. Oh, my God, he's looking at me now. And they were wax lyrical for 10 minutes about how much they love their horse. And it's really nice to hear. And you're thinking, yeah, these horses are going to be some of the best treated, happiest animals. And I go, oh, by the way, in Horse Records, if you sell them, you can transfer the records to the new owner. Oh, I never sell my boy. He's here for life. And it's so great to hear that, because you hear all those stories of ex-race horses being treated poorly. It's not the case. The vast, vast majority are treated beautifully. So, yeah.
Can I ask about payments? What are you using for payments?
Yeah.
How do you implement that?
Yeah, I'm using Stripe. They've been pretty good. A lot of the developer type questions, though, you need to find out for yourself. Their customer service is very much what you see on the dashboard is what you get. Don't ask some questions why something is something. You got to find out.
Are you using a third-party package, or you just raw implemented the latest
Stripe? I did look at DJ Stripe.
Right, that's the big one.
Yeah, the document was lacking in it. Documentation was lacking in a key part. And then I looked at how
they got a big grant from Stripe.
Did they?
Like, well, because Stripe has money, so I'm pretty sure that they got
it up
quite
in
a
the
nice
last
grant.
2 years. Yeah, I just do it raw with the Python Stripe library.
Carlton as well, I think, right? You're doing.
Yeah.
Well, I use their hosted portal stuff, which is all great.
Their console's
great. That's very easy to implement. It's very easy to implement, and people can update their card details and things like that. It's super. I recently found that their payment receipts aren't sort of EU tax compliant, and their invoices API, which is, doesn't integrate with their payments API, which isn't. And so you can't create an invoice from a payment. You have to anyway. So I've got to sort that out. So there's always wiggles, but
well, that's why there's those like what tax jar. There's all these like third party ones.
No, the new tax stuff in Stripe is brilliant, and it works. And it allocates the right tax depending on where people are and depending on where you're registered. And it does all of that brilliantly. It just doesn't create the invoices that the receipt they send to the customer isn't good enough. It hasn't got the right details on it. So you then have to create another one. Okay, fine. But compared to where it was, say, 2 years, 2 years ago, when I first looked into it for Button, I was like, oh, I'm going to have to implement the tax myself. And that's a whole different thing because, you know, EU tax is not simple.
No.
So now that Stripe do all that for you, it's like, okay, yeah, this is really quite manageable.
Yeah,
I'm quite happy.
I use the console too. I find that really great. The risk I'm at the moment is that I'm just using one payment processor. If they decide to turn the switch off, I'm in real trouble.
Yes.
But that's a phase two problem. I'm in phase one, which is just expanding the business, getting it out there, getting it self-sustaining. And phase two is doing things like, you know, reducing risk across the business and exporting to other things. And phase three is to go into things like pet records, dog records, greyhound records.
yeah. Okay. World domination.
So, I'll be covered in gold chains soon and driving a yellow Ferrari.
Fantastic. I'll just say on the payment thing, I think it's, once you've got revenues coming in at a certain scale, I think to go to your bank and pay their gateway fees is perfectly reasonable. But when you're starting up and you're at zero, to go to your bank and it's like, quite big charges to begin, quite monthly charges, quite high percent. It's like, no, I'm not doing any of that.
And I used to, at one point, I was working very closely in the payment space. I actually had plugins written for WordPress and WooCommerce and a few others in for a particular payment gateway. And yes, the banks really want to know your volume. and then they can give you a price. If you just say, I'm just starting up, you won't get a good price. So, yeah, this is in Australia anyway. So,
no, I think it's the same as
well. Yeah. Stripe 2 will change your rates based on your volume.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not at that stage yet, but one day I'll hope that they're calling me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know we're coming up on time. There are two questions I wanted to ask, Carlton. You may have others.
Cool.
One is function-based views. You have thoughts.
Yes. Big proponent of function-based views.
Super.
When I started, I coded in class-based views because I thought, oh, well, they're newer. They must be more correct. And as time went on, I just found I was writing more and more methods to do these class-based views. And the thing is, class-based views are good for vanilla, but almost nothing I do is vanilla. There's always something. So, for example, with a horse, I have to link it to the stud they're in or the ranch or whatever. So anytime I'm doing anything on a horse, I have to link this. And there's not a straightforward way to do it in class-based views. You have to code it. And then I saw that brilliant, brilliant article that said, I think we know the one. Yes, that just says, yeah, it's okay to use function-based views. And it felt like he'd solidified in writing what I was afraid to say. So now I always reach for function-based views right from the beginning. I'd never do class-based views because I know exactly what variables I've got in scope. I know where they've come from and I know what's happening. And you actually write less lines of code usually for anything beyond a really vanilla instance. And I will die on this hill, Will.
Well, that's okay. So I was going to ask what your longest function-based view was, but I think maybe a better question is, at what point do you move the logic elsewhere? Like, are there any examples you can think of where you can move it to the model or manager, or how do you think about that?
As I'm getting more and more experience with Django, I'm putting more and more in the model. When I first started, I've been coding for 20 years, I've been doing, MVC which is model view controller is what it's called traditionally in Django. It's basically model view template. Just the names are different. That's just for the listeners who don't know what MVC is. I always knew, skinny views, fat models. And when I was learning Django, I tended to just, sort of sway towards fatter views, and now I'm swaying back and doing less and less. And it's more and more in the models, and it's more useful because you can use the same code multiple times, and it's only written once. But it's more of a discipline to do that. At what point do you do it? Basically, when I think it's going to be needed more than once, I go, okay, I'll just flip this to the model, is a fairly good rule of thumb. You've got to be gentle on yourself. Sometimes it just doesn't happen and you're too busy solving the problem and, you've got so many balls in the air, you just write something down and to get it to work. But if you get a chance, do put it in the model if you can. Oh, and use the property.
Would you agree with that, Carlton?
At high level, yeah, I would. I was thinking about this in the shower the other day. Like, I use forms in a way that I don't necessarily see a lot of people using forms. I should perhaps write up. I really have quite a strict validation layer that sits between. So the view will interact normally in my life with the form, and it will rarely interact with the model layer directly. And so I put a lot of business logic in that.
In the form?
Validate and save in the form, yeah. Because I don't necessarily view it as part of the model layer, but it's the same idea.
Right.
It's that same breaking it up, create up. When I'm, if you sit down and you're just trying to write some stuff, bang it all in the view, just stick it all in the view.
Yeah,
And the reason why I'll use a class-based view, not necessarily the built-in class-based views, but just a class-based view, is because it gives me a namespace to break up the logic. You know, I've got oh yeah, this is do this thing, so I can put that in a method and I can call it and pass in the parameters and that kind of stuff. But stick it all in the view and then factor it out later.
Yes.
One thing I do to let me use the form is, say for instance you've got to associate the horse with a stud.
Yep.
With the
ranch.
The place it lives with. Yep. The ranch. I'll give it an init keyword arg that takes the ranch. So you instantiate. Yes. The form with the
that's what
the
I've ranch been doing. Object. Yes.
And then in save you're able to make that association, and so the view, it just goes if form valid, form save, and it gets back the instant save, but it didn't see anything about that interaction logic. But you could do that as a manager method, you could do that, you know.
I haven't been using the form save in forms. That's maybe something I can look at. I sort of do it in the view, but yes, I see where you're coming from. That's better. Yeah, I should put it in the form save thing.
But it's just.
Oh, I'm gentle on myself.
Different ways of cutting it up.
Carlton, I know. One thing I used to do was compare myself to the best. So I'd go on Twitter and I'd see the best and people pulling out amazing things. People like Simon Williamson. That guy's productive as anything, and everything he does is just bleeding edge.
You start
edge.
Comparing yourself to Simon, you're in trouble.
And I was like, I'm never going to be like this guy. I love what he does. I love his approach. And I'm just like, I don't understand half of this. But then I realized that someone contacted me, and I realized he was comparing himself to me. And I'm like, oh, God. And that really realized that you only ever sort of see the best parts of people. You don't sort of there's words for it, but basically I stopped needing to compare myself to the best. And I think that every programmer, while they can admire the work of the best and learn from it, don't beat yourself up because you're not as good as someone who's been in the game 10 years less than you and knows more. That's okay. You know, there's reasons and it's all right. So, I guess to the younger coders, just be gentle on yourself.
I think it's also, if you look at success in terms of financial or size or other things, so much of it is luck, of course, but walking the right direction. Like there are people who can run really fast. Often they don't ever pull their head up and look around for where they want to go. So they're just running in circles.
Yep.
Whereas if you just horse records, whatever, like have a thing and can apply a modicum of ability and talent to something that's underserved, that's always going to beat someone running fast in a circle. And if you're too in love with your tools, you never, because pure engineers don't really care what the product is. They just want to hack cool tech. And that's great, but that's different than building a business. That's different than having an impact. That's different than having a popular third-party package where you find out, hey, the code is like 10% of it and 90% of it is marketing and docs and going on podcasts and all these things
and having the relationships
that are required for success. I think it's just how you define it.
Was it you, Will, who said... I think it was you in one of the earlier podcasts of Django Chat. You said, look, I don't know how to invert a binary tree, but I can create a whole website. I can create the front, the marketing. I can do the admin area, the back end. I can link up payments and I can have it selling a product. But I can't invert a binary tree. So I think that was you. But if it was, it really inspired.
It sounds like something I would say. I can invert a binary tree, but the point is it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it was like, awesome to say that sometimes the whole product is valuable, and that really inspired me and at the time. Yeah, so that was – and I realized that I'm that kind of guy. You know, I don't know the intricacies of Django down to reading the source code and questioning what they're doing, but I can build a site from beginning to end. Which is a skill in itself, and that's okay too.
I think you need a reason to poke at the source code. Like I like the analogy of chefs and farmers, right?
Yes.
Like, I mean, Carlton's a bit of both, but most of us, myself included, are chefs. Like I just, pull things off the rack and combine them. I'm not growing seeds. I'm not working on core Django itself, really. And most people aren't, but there's a skill to both. Mm. And it's a temperament thing, too. Some people are way more comfortable on digging super, super deep. But is that what you should be working on? Like, I don't know. It's hard to know.
Yeah. I did a blog post where I have dug into Django Q and found out how to do something that's not documented. I was quite proud of that one. So I put that up there. Just put that out there to the team.
Yeah. I think, do we feature that in the newsletter? I think we've had some of
did
your
you?
Stuff. If not, I don't
really?
Know. I'll go check. If not, we would. I don't know. We might have. I think I have.
Wow.
Anyways,
I did not know
I'll
that.
Check.
I must have missed that.
Well, I don't know if I did. I think I recall seeing that and I meant to. So if I didn't, I will.
Oh, then I know.
Right.
I made
Listen,
it.
Guys, we could be going on forever here, but we're really coming up for time. Andy, is there anything else you'd like to cover that we haven't touched on thus far? This is your window.
I'm really happy to talk to any horse people about horse records. So if there's people out there in Django chat land who've got horses and want to have a look at horse records and have a bit of a chat, happy to do that. We can do it via, you know, Facebook or whatever. Happy to have a chat. But yeah, I think I covered everything. I wanted to talk about work-life balance and I'm glad we got to talk about that. That's really important to me.
Well, did we? Did we talk?
Well, we said be gentle on yourself, mate.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Fine. Yeah, okay.
That's how Carlton and I got connected. He has a beautiful talk on the topic and
yeah,
at a certain point in your life and
talk.
Career, it resonates.
Everybody should listen to that because, you've got to look after yourself effectively. You're not just...
It's that 5 years median age thing or median experience thing. Right.
Yeah, that's
right.
If you're
going to go beyond that, you've got to
Look after yourself.
Got to look after yourself.
Yep. Yeah, and things come up, and you know, management always want more out of you. There's always more points in the sprint they can get out of you. But you need to know to look after yourself. So that reason being, you need sustainability. You need to be able to keep going. You can't just have these crunches all the time. So yeah, I could go on.
Well, next time we have you on.
Next time.
We'll do that.
We'll do philosophy next time too.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'd have to start a new podcast.
Right.
Andy, thanks very much for coming on. And well done with Horse Raiders. And well done, you know, I enjoy seeing you on Twitter all the time. And it's lovely to chat with you about it.
Thanks, Carlton. Thanks, Will. It was great. Thank you all.
We're Chat Django. Django Chat. Chat Django on Twitter. DjangoChat.com. Join us next time.
Bye-bye.